signing up for Affordable Care Act health coverage. Despite the efforts in Washington to repeal it, the Affordable Care Act remains the law of the land, and the health insurance marketplace is there for those who are qualified. The enrollment period has been shortened, though, so if you receive your health care coverage through the marketplace, it is time to start thinking about what you will need. The first day to enroll is next week, November 1st. The last day, December 15th. There have been changes since last year. Most notably, Anthem has withdrawn from Maine's ACA marketplace, and premiums for some plans are expected to rise. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, an opportunity to pose your questions about ACA enrollment. We'll also speak with national healthcare correspondent Julie Rovner about recent news about the ACA. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There has been a lot in the news about attempts to overturn or overhaul the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. The Senate failed two attempts to end Obamacare. President Trump has, through executive orders, managed to change certain aspects of it. The sign-up period for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act begins 1 week from today. I have a panel of experts with me to answer your questions about signing up for health care insurance, changes to the law, or concerns about the future of the ACA. In the studio with me, Kate Endy. She is Consumer Assistance Program Manager with Mainers for Affordable Healthcare. Ashley McCarthy is Health Navigator Program Coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Joining us from our Augusta studio, Joanne Rollins-Secunda. She is Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division with the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And with us from Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. As always, we want to hear from you. This program is for you. What questions do you have about the ACA? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Julie Rovner, I'd like to start with you. So much has been happening as far as the ACA in the past few weeks. We've seen efforts to repeal and replace fail in Congress. Then the Trump administration announced the federal government will no longer fund the subsidies. But now that decision's being appealed. So what I want to ask you is, where do we stand today? If I am someone who depends on the ACA for coverage, what do I need to know right now?
Well, where we stand today is that the ACA is still the law of the land. It is basically all intact, including those subsidies. There's two kinds of subsidies, and I know we'll talk about this more. There's subsidies to help people pay their premiums. They're available for people up to 400% of poverty. Then there's another set of subsidies for people with incomes up to 250% of poverty. That's about $30,000 for an individual. And those people get help paying their out-of-pocket costs in addition to their premiums. Those are the subsidies that the president cut off, but it didn't really end those subsidies. It just ended the federal government's payment to the insurance companies. Under the law, the insurance companies still have to provide those subsidies to people who are eligible for them. So if you're one of those people who gets both kinds of subsidies, you will continue to get both kinds of subsidies. It's just that the insurance companies have raised premiums in various ways to make up for that. But other than that, things are, if not the same, then similar. One big change, of course, is that the open enrollment period is half as long as it's been for the past several years. It starts next Wednesday, as you pointed out, but it ends December 15th this year.
And my understanding also is that the advertising budget has been slashed.
That's right. It has by about 90%. And the budget for assisters and navigators has also been slashed. That varies by state. So it will be more difficult to get help if you need it. It's one reason that most experts are saying not only is it more important than ever to shop this year, if you currently have coverage, but it's important to do it early because if you need help, help will be harder to get at the very end at that crush when everybody tries to sign up at once.
What can you tell us about the bipartisan effort to stabilize the health insurance marketplace by Senators Murray and Alexander? What would it do, and what are its chances of passing?
Well, basically, this was an effort that was supposed to happen before the filing deadline for insurers in September. They wanted to actually guarantee those cost-sharing reductions, the second set of subsidies I talked about. And in exchange, because that's something that Democrats wanted, the Republicans wanted a little bit more flexibility for states to make some changes to how they implement the law. And, of course, what happened was the filing deadline came and went. We're about to get to open enrollment. Senators Murray and Alexander came up with a bipartisan bill last week, which actually has, at least on paper, 60 votes in the Senate. That's what you would need to, you know, to defeat a filibuster. But there's been some resistance. The president has changed his mind about whether he supports this multiple times. And then just yesterday, the chairman of the tax writing committees in both the House and the Senate, who also have a lot of jurisdiction over health care, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, Congressman Brady of Texas, Kevin Brady, came out with an alternative bill that clearly wouldn't get 60 votes because Democrats probably wouldn't vote for it. But they're busy doing tax reform. So it's completely unclear what's happening with the bipartisan bill. The Congressional Budget Office just came out this morning with an estimate that said that the Murray-Alexander bill, the bipartisan bill from last week, would save the government a little bit of money, but they had assumed that these cost-sharing reductions would continue to be paid anyway. It's not clear whether that will do anything for or against this bill. If something happened, it would be with an eye to 2019, not 2018. Probably won't happen until later in November or December.
Joanne, I remember headlines saying that Anthem has withdrawn from the main marketplace. What Anthem plans are affected?
The only Anthem plans that are affected are their marketplace plans, so the plans that people could potentially get subsidies for. Anthem is still going to be in the market for the off-marketplace plans, as well as for group plans, as well as for Medicare supplement. So it's only that one segment of the market that's getting affected.
So those who have purchased an Anthem plan through the ACA marketplace, through Obamacare, will need to find another plan this year.
Well, what's going to happen to those people is they're going to get a letter from the federal government, from CMS, saying that CMS has automatically mapped them into either Harvard Pilgrim or into Maine Community Health Options, CHO. Once they get that letter, I mean, they can certainly shop for whatever insurance carrier they'd like to have, for whatever plan they'd like to have, or they can auto-re-enroll. We are certainly encouraging people to do the shopping and to make sure that they get the plan that suits them the best.
Kate, what do we know about costs this year, specifically premiums?
So premiums have gone up, but I think it's really important to remember that as these premiums go up, so do the subsidies. So people should be able to get a plan for roughly the same amount they paid last year, so that shouldn't be affected. And I think one other thing to note is a lot of these letters that carriers are sending out to folks for renewals telling them these are the changes to your plan, this is how much you're going to have to pay next year if you want to keep your plan. The quote that they're given in those letters isn't always the most accurate, and most people actually will end up paying a lot less than what they see in that letter.
So don't be frightened when you see
exactly.
that letter in
don't
the mail.
Don't get alarmed.
Yeah, Ashley, you're nodding as well. Ashley, if I have ACA coverage, what do I need to be doing right now before next week, before the enrollment period opens?
So just a few things that I would consider is just making sure that you kind of look at what you need to get ready to apply again. So get ready to look at your income for 2018 and prepare those types of things so that you can go onto the marketplace and actively re-enroll. And I would just make sure that if you are being switched from Anthem to another program, that you'd want to make sure that you have all of your doctors and medications covered and just have those prepared with you so that you can make sure those are covered under the plan with either Harvard Pilgrim or Community Health Options.
And I'd just like to tag on that we just found out maybe an hour ago that healthcare.gov's window shopping function is now up and at least partially working. It is giving estimated subsidy amounts, and it's showing the number of bronze, silver, and gold plans that are available from each of the insurance companies. So it's a place to get started, as well as the Bureau of Insurance has a premium rate calculator that will show just the premium rates, not the subsidies, but they can, that whole calculator can be sorted by in terms of premiums from lowest to highest, in terms of you want to look at a specific metal level, you want to look at just a specific carrier. So there are shopping options available now before open enrollment starts.
All right. Well, and we'll put those links on our Facebook page, the Maine Calling Facebook page. Julie Rovner, there are concerns that many fewer people will enroll this year, aren't there?
There are. You know, the Trump administration has done a variety of things that are basically, if they're not actually intended, will have the effect of depressing enrollment, including, you know, just some of the basic confusion of, does the law still exist? The president says, you know, almost every chance he gets that Obamacare is dead, that, you know, that the law is past tense. And that is not, in fact, the case. The law is still there. I think the biggest concern, particularly with the cuts in the advertising and outreach, is that sick people will find a way to sign up because they know how important it is for them to have insurance, but healthy people might not, and that won't help the risk pool, and that could prompt even more insurers to drop out. Also, insurers are you know, unhappy, and they have been expressing this publicly about sort of the on again, off again. They don't know what's happening. The administration invited states to apply for waivers to some of these rules. A number of states wanted to do waivers that would let them do reinsurance pools to help pay for some of the highest cost patients. And then the administration dragged its feet and ended up not approving most of those waivers, which, you know, did not help the status of the marketplaces. So there's been all kinds of you know, things that are up in the air basically all year that does not make the federal government a very reliable business partner for these insurers who are trying to offer coverage.
Kate, is there a concern the same thing will happen here in Maine, that there'll be significantly fewer people signing up?
I think absolutely. We're hearing from a lot of people who are just so confused, and there's a lot of mixed messages going out. So I think that a lot of people might not know that they can still get a marketplace plan or that they can still keep their subsidies. We're also really concerned with a shortened open enrollment period that fewer people are going to be able to access in-person assistance when they need to at the end of the period. And so that could also dissuade people.
All right. I have read, Ashley, that and I think Julie mentioned that the grants for organizations that are helping people enroll have been cut. Has Western Maine Community Action seen that happen and your partners throughout the state?
Yep. So we basically received 86% of our funding back this year. So we are fairly lucky, I guess, compared to some other states that saw huge cuts in their Navigator program. So we were able to still fund every single Navigator program that we sub grantee with, which is most of the CAP agencies around the state. And so they will be open for business. And we, you know, we have potential of other funding from MEHAF as well to supplement what we've lost. So we're pretty lucky here in Maine to still have Navigators and, you know, CACs and everybody around the state. So, you know, please call us because we're open and we're here and we've got openings. We're ready to go. So,
okay, great. We're going to go to the phones. We're going to start with Seth, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Seth. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I love the show, by the way. Where to start? I'm a vice president with Boston Partners Financial Group. I have an office down in the Biddeford Mills. And I think this is so important and that you're doing this today, and it's so needed. A background of me. I'm putting on an event to try to help people through the process of signing up. The reason for doing this, just so you know, is, and again, I'm a for-profit company, but I'm kind of just doing this more of a charity event to kind of help people through the process. Last year alone, I had a couple clients that filed bankruptcy because of medical bills. And both families, this could have been easily avoided if they had the correct plans. And then later we had another individual, unfortunately, had a very close a client of mine. It was a family member that, because of their medical bills, he was concerned about burdening his wife and unfortunately took his life. And so after this, I thought there was definitely a problem. And so I called a lot of my clients to check to see what they had, Maine being one of the older states in the country. And I noticed about 25 to 30% didn't know what they had or didn't have the adequate coverage or were paying for something that they could barely afford. So, going back to what I said in the beginning, you know, I thought we had to do something to try to help people out through this process because, you know, calling somebody or like you mentioned before, or doing it online it's difficult.
Seth, I would love it if you would go onto the Maine Calling Facebook page under today's post and put information about the event that you're having. So if people are hearing you right now and would like to go, are able to go. But let me ask you this. Are you finding that the clients that didn't have the coverage actually may have qualified for ACA coverage and didn't know it?
Yeah, a lot of times. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, people, you know, there's ways to either, you know, adjust your income as a financial advisor to, you know, with whether it's contributing to an IRA or whatever, where they would qualify for certain subsidies and they didn't know about it. And a couple little adjustments could make a huge difference and people could afford things. And what you just mentioned before, I mean, there's a lot of people that had no idea what they could qualify for. And, you know, and think automatically that it's just going to be, you know, too pricey for them, and they could actually afford it.
Well, Seth, thank you so much for calling today. And again, information about your event, it would be fantastic if you could put it on our Facebook page, or if you email me, I'll put it on our Facebook page. Ashley, you were nodding while he was talking. Do you find that there are people out there, many people out there, who would qualify and perhaps even qualify for a subsidy who don't know that they do?
Definitely. I mean, we get calls every year. I mean, every year you think that with more information about the ACA, people are going to know. But every year our Navigator program gets folks that call in. We help them with application and they're like, wow, I can't believe that I'm getting the subsidy. It's super helpful. I've got so many health issues, our children. So, yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. We get phone calls all the time with these types of folks.
And Julie Roffner, the ACA was in part designed to reduce the kinds of stories Seth is telling us, people declaring bankruptcy because of medical bills. Have we actually seen a decrease in these kind of stories? What do the statistics tell us?
Well, we have seen a decrease in the number of people declaring medical bankruptcy. But of course, there are a lot of people who are not eligible for subsidies or for any other kind of help. There are people who are just a little bit earn a little bit too much to get help, but still have trouble paying their medical bills. One thing that I think is really important this year, and it has been a confusing process. The first year, the computer program didn't really work very well. People had trouble signing up. This year, you know, you'll be automatically enrolled in a plan if your plan, you'll be automatically re-enrolled in your current plan, or if that's not available, in a different plan. Because of the changes to the subsidies and how premiums are going up, it's more important than ever that people go in and look at those and find a plan that they can afford, because this year, the way they're doing the automatic re-enrollment, you could end up getting re-enrolled into a plan that doesn't work for you, and you won't be able to change it because it will come after the end of open enrollment.
And I want to jump in on Julie's comment. When we were looking at the Bureau of Insurance, we were looking at the rates that the insurance companies were coming up with. We actually required them to do both the rates with and without the cost sharing reductions. And then the rates that we approved with modifications were the ones that included the cost sharing reductions. So those are the rates that are out there. There was some concern that rates might go up again now that the federal government has decided that it's not going to do the cost sharing reductions, but those rates are not going to go up again. They are set in stone for 2018. The other point I want to bring up is the fact that the insurance companies chose to load that lack of CSR into the silver plans, the on-exchange silver plans. So going along with what Julie says about re-enrolling and really taking the time to shop instead, you might find that a bronze plan or a gold plan might end up being really comparable in terms of premium to what the silver plans are. In fact, that there's at least one gold plan that's cheaper than silver plans right now. So it really pays to get out there and do some homework and take a look at what's going to work out the best for you in terms of premium, in terms of deductibles and co-pays, all that kind of co-insurance. And also look at things like drug formularies and look at who's in the provider network. And you'll be much happier when you've done it.
All right, that's Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, the Director of Consumer Healthcare with Maine Bureau of Insurance. Joanne, thank you. We are going to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions for this panel of experts, please give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, if you could keep your email brief, that would be appreciated, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
For decades, California cities have grown outward, and that's put a lot of houses in wildfire-prone areas. As the state recovers from this month's fires, some see an opportunity to break that pattern.
Now we need to do it, you know, stop talking and planning, but actually start building in the right places, in the right way.
Growth Without Sprawl, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, weekday evenings from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Super Thursday is coming up, November 2nd. Once again, one day instead of the week-long on-air campaigns of years past or like other public radio stations today around the country. We've got a good thing going here in Maine. If you value Maine Public Radio, and perhaps you also listen to our Maine Public Classical channel, your support helps keep Maine Public going strong into the year ahead. So please take part in Super Thursday. Or you can contribute early at mainepublic.org or by calling 800-866-1475. New supporters, longtime supporters, together will keep programs you value and Maine Public Radio strong. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your affordable care sign-up questions. With me in the studio, Ashley McCarthy, a health navigator program coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Kate Endy is consumer assistance program manager with Mainers for Affordable Health Care. Joining us from our Augusta studio, Joanne Rawlings-Secunda. She's director of the Consumer Health Care Division with the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And with us from Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we will start with John, who's calling from Rockport. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I really appreciate your show. I'm a demographic of over 60, quite healthy. My wife is on Medicare now, and I'm self-employed, and we make too much to get any subsidy. And I'm already paying $650 a month, and I feel like, you know, going up 15% beyond that is, you know, and that's just for a basic bronze plan, which I basically can't afford to go to the doctor. Is there any hope for someone like me? You know, can I buy a policy in Massachusetts where they have, you know, anybody have any help for someone in my demographic?
Joanne, I'll turn to you. It's true that he cannot buy a policy over state lines, correct?
That's correct. There was the executive order that came out a week or so ago about the possibility of association health plans. But what has to happen before that executive order can be implemented is that the federal agencies have to actually create rules. So anything along that lines would happen in 2019 or later. So at this point, I mean, John, is that your best bet is to take a look at the premium calculator that I mentioned before and see if, you know, about all the different gold and bronze plans that are out there. And the other option that we're trying to explore at the Bureau of Insurance is you've probably heard of hardship waivers for catastrophic plans. Catastrophic plans are normally plans that are only available for people under 30. But what there's also is available is an affordability condition so that if you can show that your household income would, that your insurance is greater than a certain percentage of your household income, you might be able to get a catastrophic plan as well.
Kate or Ashley, who would you recommend John turn to if he wants to apply for one of these waivers? How does that work?
Well, he could do that through the marketplace, but really I would have him either, you know, contact a local assister, or he could actually call our helpline at Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, which is 1-800-965-7476. And we can walk people through the process, help them compare plans, and figure out what their options are.
Okay, 1-800-965-7476.
That's it.
Okay, we'll also post that on our Facebook page. John, good luck to you, and thank you for your call. We're going to go to Frederick, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I have to say I would be remiss if I didn't mention that all of the panelists and yourself, Jennifer, are women. And I just wanted to recognize that, and I appreciate your panel. And I have to say that we have to mention that this, of course, is the result of conservatives' attempts to undermine our government and democracy, and with the support of Bruce Poliquin. And all Republicans are in favor of defunding basically all aspects of our government. So my point is that, one, we have the chance this November to vote for an increase in the eligibility under an expanded Medicaid. That needs to be mentioned. But let me ask this. Is there any possible attempt to Julian Washington of the private sector foundation world trying to act as a stopgap in funding private assistance to the millions and millions of people that need health care assistance in paying in this for-profit health insurance industry?
Well, there is a group that is working to basically try to make up for some of the cuts that the Trump administration is making to the outreach and assistance for signing up for health care under the ACA. That's not paying for people's health care, but at least it is. It's called Get America Covered. It was just launched. It's a bunch of former Obama administration officials with the help of the foundation world and some other donors who are trying to basically help people in the absence of the Trump administration's paying to help people sign up. So there are efforts to sort of overcome some of the budget cuts. You know, as I'm sure everyone has seen, the health debate in Washington is pretty solidly stalled. They haven't even been able to renew the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, that expired October 1st. That's something that has strong bipartisan support, and yet it's now almost the end of October, and that's still hanging out there. So getting anything done legislatively in Washington, not so easy, but there are efforts underway. And I will say that the Trump administration does at least seem to be, you know, not trying to undercut the open enrollment process itself. It did start, as someone mentioned, the window shopping today. People can get on the website. It has its usual glitches. I tried to find it and had trouble doing it. But they, you know, they say that they want this to go smoothly. That's the administration officials say they want it to go smoothly. We will see.
I would also just want to add on that we were talking about Ashley had mentioned before MEHAF and getting some funding from them. MEHAF is the Maine Health Access Foundation. And they are, in addition to helping make up the difference between what the navigators lost in the federal budget, they are also have an Enroll 207, www.enroll207, where they are trying to get the word out about the shorter open enrollment period. And they also have a link on their site to allow people to find who is the nearest navigator or assister that could actually help them.
Okay, and Kate?
I was just going to add that, you know, as Frederick, you pointed out, a lot of the political pressure going on right now in Washington, you know, we really appreciate that we've had in Maine a lot of great leadership with a Republican Senator, Susan Collins, an independent Senator, Angus King, in helping to preserve the ACA and protect the protections that Mainers really rely on.
And Frederick, we should mention that Maine Calling on Monday was a debate over question two, which would expand Medicaid in Maine. You can find that program on our website, which is mainecalling.org. Thanks for your call. I'm going to move on to Kate calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call and this incredibly important topic. I have a question in regard to my daughter, who is now 22. She has fallen into that chasm of she doesn't earn enough money to qualify for a subsidy and gets referred back to Department of Human Services to qualify for Medicaid, but of course our state didn't take the Medicaid expansion, so she doesn't qualify for that either. So she's just been uninsured, and she has things that she needs to take care of, her health issues, and I'm wondering if anyone has some advice for someone like her, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Absolutely. So, you know, Kate, as we mentioned, you know, November 7th, we'll be voting on question two, which would expand coverage to people like your daughter. But also across the state, there's a lot of free and sliding scale clinics. as well as, you know, hospitals in Maine actually have to provide free medically necessary care to people under certain income levels, which it sounds like your daughter would fall in. And so I'd really encourage you or your daughter to call our helpline. Again, that number is 1-800-965-7476, and we can help connect her with the free and sliding scale programs in her area.
And I just like to also add that I think it's important that she is doing an application on the marketplace, even though, you know, knowing that the it'll get sent to the Maine Care office. But she will have that exemption number for the tax penalty, and then she'll also have that application open, because something that people don't always know in Maine, because we're not a non-expansion state, if she has that application open on the marketplace, then if her income does change mid-year, that will open her up for a special enrollment period so that she can access health insurance on the marketplace. So that's another important thing to know.
An email from Gia. I'm someone who doesn't make much money, and I'm on the ACA, and I'm worried about the repeated attempts by Trump to sabotage the law. What can I expect to happen if the ACA were to be dismantled or repealed? Julie?
Well, for right now, it's important to know that if you're getting the subsidy help, you will continue to get it. In fact, as we've discussed, in some cases, people, because so many of the increases are being added on to the silver plans, and that's where the subsidy is calculated, people can end up either buying a gold plan for less money than the silver plan, or in many cases, they can get a bronze plan for free. That's going to be more common, given sort of how this is all played out. Obviously, you know, if the law were to go away, it depends on how it were to go away. You know, Congress kept talking about repeal and delay, where they would keep things going for a couple of years while they moved to something else. It's completely unclear how or whether that's going to happen. It doesn't look like Congress is even going to try again until the spring at the earliest. It's hard to imagine this would happen right in the teeth of an election year. So it looks like the law is going to be around at least for next year, and quite possibly for the year after, and then we'll have to see. But for right now, people who are getting subsidies will still get them, and there is an insurance company. There are choices in every single state. Sometimes it's only one company offering, you know, multiple levels of plans, but every single county in every state at this point has an insurer on the exchange.
All right, we'll go to Patricia calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Patricia, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I will be turning 65 in February of 2018. I'm currently enrolled as an ACA member through Anthem, and I need to know whether in the month of January 2018, I'm going to have to purchase like a bridge plan or something to get me from my current plan to Medicare.
Joanne, do you know the answer?
Patricia, do you have a subsidized plan, or is it on the marketplace or off the marketplace?
It's on the marketplace, yes.
Then, yes, you're going to need to get a short-term plan to hold you over until you can get onto Medicare.
She could also choose to sign up for a marketplace plan for just the month of January,
right,
and then go in, because that way she'll have that full coverage, she'll have the tax credit in the subsidy, and then just making sure that she goes in time to cancel that plan for February.
So she'll have a busy December, January, February. Patricia, thanks for your question. I'm sure you're not alone in that question. We have an email from Nat. My income for 2018 is uncertain, so I'm leaning towards marking my income above a level that warrants a subsidy to avoid paying a penalty. If my earnings turn out to be within the range that triggers a subsidy, can I receive a tax credit for my 2018 tax return for the amount that would have been subsidized? Ashley. Or Kate, do you know?
So the marketplace asks you to project your income. And so that's really hard for a lot of people who have fluctuating income or who are self-employed. And so it's really your best guess. And so we always encourage people to really be honest and faithful. You are testing that everything you're saying is true. So we just encourage them to, you know, put in your best estimate. And if it turns out you estimated your income a bit lower than it really was, and, you know, maybe you estimated you wouldn't be eligible, but then it turns out you should have been, that'll all get reconciled during tax time.
And go ahead.
So there may be an option of just estimating what you think it will be under the 400%, if you think it's going to be under that, and then just choosing to take none of the tax credits at that time, so that you're paying full price, so that if you do go over, then you've used none of the tax credit. Is that correct? Does that make sense?
And Julie, you were jumping in as well?
That's correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there is that reconciliation at the end. So if you were eligible and you didn't know it, you can get it, you can get it back.
I would say as long as you enroll through the marketplace. So if you enroll in a plan off marketplace, assuming that you're not eligible and it turns out you should have been, you won't be able to get that at the end of the year.
All right. Well, before we take a quick break, a note about tomorrow's program. We are going to be discussing the changing U.S.-Cuba relationship. If you have questions or comments, you can email them to us ahead of time, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of two children abducted by a rebel group in Uganda, forced to commit atrocities, and forced to marry each other. They developed a bond, had a child, escaped, and began a new life. We talk with journalist Alexis Okeowo about her new book about ordinary men and women fighting extremism in Africa. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Both Maine Public Radio and Television broadcast BBC News programming. The comprehensive global reach of the BBC's coverage and the diverse viewpoints and perspectives included complement our overall news coverage. Maine Public Television has two daily weekday broadcasts, at 6 in the morning and at 6 in the evening. Here on Maine Public Radio, you can hear the BBC World Service from midnight to 6 in the morning, and the full BBC News Hour at 9 o'clock weekday mornings and at 4 on the weekend afternoons. You can see mainepublic.org for our program schedules.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your ACA questions. Joining me today, Kate Endy. She's Consumer Assistance Program Manager with Mainers for Affordable Healthcare. Ashley McCarthy is a Health Navigator Program Coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Joining us from our Augusta studio, Joanne Rawlings-Secunda. She is Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division with the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And with us from Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. And let's see, we'll go to an email from Kathleen. I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place. I had to leave my job due to Lyme disease, got on the ACA last year, but not well enough to work, and took a portion of my IRA to get by. Lyme services have all been out of pocket. Little, if anything, Lyme-related coverage. This sign-up year, I'm ready and willing to work, but not employed yet, and don't know what my income will be, and am unsure about sign-up. Any ideas?
So I think that there's a few different options here. And so if you're unsure about your income and unemployed yet, first of all, if you receive unemployment income, then that does count as income for the marketplace, and you can use that to go and apply. If you are worried about that you don't think you're going to make enough money to receive the subsidies and that you might be in the gap, then definitely looking into the free and sliding scale programs in your area. There are prescription assistance programs, including Med Access, which is statewide. And also, as Ashley mentioned, you can go in, submit your application, get an exemption, and then later on, if you get a job and that income is going to put you over the threshold that you would need to be to qualify for subsidies, you could go in and then update your application at that time and enroll into coverage.
We'll go to Lori in Mount Desert Island. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm kind of have been boggled by this whole insurance situation for a long time. I'm older. I've had insurance before. Had a lot of medical expenses through a late spouse, and I'm so gun shy of getting myself roped into any kind of. I currently have no insurance. I've been self-employed and always thought that if I had, tried to take good care of myself, I always thought that if I had to have something cataclysmic, like one of your people there said, that hospitals must fund medically necessary care. And so I realize that's not optional. But what you also said, that somebody else said, that it could, that the plan, if you find one that's affordable now, it could change to one that isn't. That it seems to be set for 1 to 2 years, but everybody that I'm listening to there seems very up in the air. And nobody can say that this won't either completely end or be radically repealed. Susan Collins isn't one to count on in terms of support. as she's shown recently. And it seems so volatile right now that I can't be the only person out here that's just wondering if the whole thing. I know people want more people into this program because that helps the program and those who are already in it. But to get into a program and then find that it turns into something else, and then you're locked in, and they, you know, want you to be there to help these private insurance
companies.
Yeah, Lori,
I want to ask you, what do you consider locked in? If you are, if you have a one-year obligation, do you consider that locked in?
Well, I'm not ignorant of the fact that once the government has your information and that you're, you know, enrolled in some program, that you have a buy-in already and you may be required to continue that in some form, whether it's after the fact and
So are you paying? Are you paying the penalty now?
Everybody has all the information out there anyway. Pardon me?
Okay. Are you paying the penalty now for not having health insurance?
No, because I didn't qualify, apparently. I have not been paying a penalty, no.
Okay. Julie,
also
thoughts?
Because I had a loss that I've it's been on my books for a number of years from an investment. So it hasn't had to play. I haven't had to cover that through my income.
All right. Julie Rovner, thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, one thing that's important to keep in mind is that hospitals have to treat you if you have a medical emergency, but they don't have to pay for it. They will send you a bill, and those bills can be very large. As we heard earlier, there are available free clinics for sort of more routine care. But if you end up with something catastrophic in the hospital, you're going to have a very large bill. That seems to be why, you know, I know for as you get older, insurance gets more expensive. It's under the ACA. It's less expensive than it was in some ways for older people than it was before because of the way they changed the requirements. But a lot of older people at least have been trying to buy, you know, the lowest level bronze plan just in case something happens. As you get older, that's more likely. You know, that is one concern. As you mentioned, you're not subject to the penalty, likely because your income is not high enough to owe income taxes. And that's one of the reasons you wouldn't have to pay it. But it is always, you know, most experts say it is preferable to have insurance than not have it. Although, as we keep hearing, at this point, some of the insurance is just so expensive that people simply can't afford it.
And I would just add to that, Lori, is that, you know, if you sign up for a marketplace plan, you're certainly not even locked in for the full year. So if you signed up, you can keep it for the full year, but you could also cancel that plan at any time. And that goes for anybody. And just adding on, so hospitals do have to provide in the state of Maine free medically necessary care for people below 150% of the federal poverty level. So for a single individual, that's about $18,000 a year. However, that doesn't cover everything, you know, and that wouldn't cover an ambulance ride. It wouldn't cover anybody who's not an employee of that hospital. So usually, let's say you have to have a surgery, it's not going to cover your anesthesiologist typically. So it's certainly not comprehensive coverage the way that an insurance plan would be, but it can help provide some medically necessary
so,
care.
So, Kate, your advice to Lori would be to sign up.
Definitely to explore your options at the very least.
All right.
And I want to tag on along with that. Lori was concerned about volatility as the year goes by. And I just want to reiterate that the rates are set for the entire year. So if she or anybody else buys a plan at this point and is concerned that the rates are going to jump up at some point, they're not. They're going to stay exactly where they are.
All right, Lori, thanks for your call. We have two emails about the silver plans. The email from Mary says, is it true that only silver plans get tax credit? And from Linda, I heard that silver plans are going to be the most expensive. Is this true?
So I think, you know, Joanne's already mentioned quite a bit that a lot of the silver plans might be a bit more expensive than some of the other levels this year, but they're certainly not the only ones that can get tax credits. Tax credits apply to any marketplace plan. Silver plans are the only plans that qualify for cost-sharing reductions, and those are the subsidies that are going to lower your deductibles, your co-pays, your co-insurance, all of the costs that it really takes to use your insurance to actually go see your doctor, and those are only available at the silver plans.
And also, if those silver plans, if you earn little enough to qualify for the cost-sharing subsidies, you're not going to pay the increases on those silver plans. The federal government is. They're going to basically come in and pay the increases. So for people who are eligible for the cost-sharing reductions, they might end up paying less for a silver plan, even though the sticker price on that silver plan is going up to make up for the lack of the insurers being paid back. It's the way they're doing it. Most people on the exchange who get premium help won't see those increases. And in many states, I believe Maine included, there will be silver plans available off the exchanges so that people who earn too much also won't have to pay those increases.
Right. And those silver plans that are off the exchange, none of that CSR piece has been built into those. It's only been built into the silver plan.
CSR cost saving reduction.
Yes, thank you.
Cost sharing reduction. Excuse me.
So that it's only being built into the on-marketplace plans. So in other words, the plans that people can get subsidies for. So if you're not eligible for a subsidy and you're looking off of the marketplace, you shouldn't. The silver plans there are not going to be as much money as they are on the marketplace.
Going to Martin, calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Martin. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment in regard to the woman who called in, whose daughter was 22 and couldn't afford her insurance options that were available to her individually. One of the features of the ACA is that people can stay on their parents' insurance until age 26, or maybe till the end of age 26. I don't know if it's till the end of 25 or the end of 26. But in any case, she could be on her parents' policy, and then if that's making it prohibitively expensive for the parents, then she could reimburse her parents.
Julie?
That's true. It's the end of 25. You have to get off when you turn 26. But that is true. There are times when that is not feasible for families, though, either because the parent doesn't have access to it, or as a caller said, the parent would then have to basically buy coverage. I know people who actually buy their children, catastrophic. If you're under 30, you can buy a catastrophic plan, which can be less expensive still. So that is another option. I don't know if anybody mentioned that.
Martin, thanks for your call. Marsha on Facebook writes, my husband and I are on Medicare, and our daughter is a student at an out-of-state college. Since we claim her as a dependent, I was assuming we can't go to the exchange for her insurance. As an aside, I've been to the Gov website, and there is only one catastrophic insurance available to us, and that rate has increased 67%. But let's go back to the first part. If you claim your young adult child as a dependent, can that child qualify for an exchange?
Absolutely. Whoever's the tax filer should be the one doing the application, because whatever subsidy she may or may not qualify for would be based off of the parent's income. It goes by tax household. And we're lucky in Maine that both carriers actually provide some out-of-state coverage. Community Health Options has some providers in New Hampshire and a handful in Massachusetts. And Harvard Pilgrim actually has a wider network in New England. And as well, they have a program exactly for the situation. If there's dependents who are under 26 living in other states, they can call member services and actually sign up for a program that would allow them to get in-network coverage in these other states.
An email from Mark. We are retired, and we were recently notified that our insurance costs would be going from $410 a month with the subsidy to $2,405 a month with no subsidy. We cannot afford $29,000 per year insurance cost. Will we be penalized if we decide to self-insure?
Are they losing the subsidy? Have they been told they were losing the subsidy? Or is it that it just hasn't been included in the initial letter? Because there was definitely a kind of a scare going through people with initial letters sent out that didn't include subsidies, and people thought that meant they were losing them.
Sure, it's an email, so I can't ask Mark your question, but Joanne, is what you're saying is you guessed that he got a letter and it gave him this number, and he's worried about that. And what we talked about earlier in the program is if you get that letter, don't assume that that number is accurate. Is that what you would say to Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, your subsidy should only change if your income changes. Your subsidy shouldn't change because your carrier has raised rates, which most of them have. The subsidy is tied to your income, not how much the insurance costs. But also, I mean, as to the second question, you can be penalized for not having coverage, but there are a number of exemptions, and one of them is if the coverage is truly unaffordable. I believe it's more, at this point, it's a little over 9. If it would be more than 9% of your income, then you would not be subject to the penalty because it would be deemed unaffordable.
We'll go to Nancy in Cape Porpoise. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm covered under the ACA for 18 months now, and I'm with Harvard Pilgrim, which fortunately is sticking around in Maine. I ended up not making as much money as I had estimated for this year, significantly less, and I'm wondering how that's going to impact me tax-wise, if I'll be dinged for that or not.
Go ahead.
No, it should be just the opposite. When you go to reconcile at the end of the year, when you pay your taxes next year, you'll get a refund because you were owed more in tax credits than you're taking because you're earning less.
All right. Thanks, Nancy, for your question. Good luck to you. We're going to go to Claire, who's calling from Richmond. Claire, we're almost out of time, so if you can make your question brief, that'd be terrific.
Hi. Yeah. Why is it that so many businesses who provide health care or health insurance for their employees, why is it that they aren't speaking out for a single-payer health care system, which would greatly reduce their business expense for health care, for health insurance?
Julie Rovner.
Such a good question. Some of them are, but you're right, not many. Some employers, particularly larger ones, like to offer health insurance. It's a perk that allows them to, you know, to get a better, healthier workforce. I think they're a little bit concerned about what would happen if the employer insurance system went away. There are others who, obviously, as you say, particularly smaller companies, for whom this is a much larger percentage of what they make. As a company, would might like it to go away, but it's also much more political and ideological than it is business at this point.
But I would actually add, I was at a small business forum in Portland this morning, and a similar question came up. And one of the things that was brought up is that a lot of small businesses actually feel a moral obligation that's part of what they owe their employees.
Claire, thanks for your interesting question. And I'm going to end here with an email that may not have a response other than some nods from the people in the room with me. Email from Brigida, who writes, "At the end of last year, I unexpectedly fell into the coverage gap and thought I would have to pay back all of my subsidy. I was pleasantly surprised that there is a cap on the penalty that roughly equaled the amount I actually paid on the premiums. Before people write off marketplace plans, they should know that it may cost just as much to go uncovered as it would to pay the premiums throughout the year." So, yeah, we've got some nods here. I want to thank you guys for being here and offering your expertise. Such a confusing issue for so many people and so important for those who turn to the ACA for coverage. Julie Rovner was with us from Washington. She is Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, Director of the Consumer Health Care Division with the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Ashley MacArthur is Health Navigator Program Coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. And Kate Endy, Consumer Assistance Program Manager with Mainers for Affordable Health Care. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Dan Plummer took your calls. We had help from Mal Leary in Augusta. I will be posting resources mentioned on today's program on our Maine Calling Facebook page if you didn't get a chance to write them down. Tomorrow on the program, the changing U.S.-Cuba relationship. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.